student test grading, pregnancy and bed rest, and revised U.S. AIDS numbers, plus a look at inflammatory bowel disorders. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Good day and welcome to The Nursing Show. This is Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'm your host here at The Nursing Show. And I'd just like to thank all of you for checking out the show this week. If you haven't already done so, make sure you head over and check out nursingshow.com, where you'll find links to everything discussed in this and all of the other episodes, as well as other articles, links, and news items posted throughout the course of each week between the podcasts. So make sure you head over and check out nursingshow.com. If you haven't noticed already, you may have decided that I sound a little bit different, maybe a little bit of a frog in the throat, and that's because I have been battling an upper respiratory infection for the last week or so, since last week's episode almost, and it has really knocked me on my keister, and this is actually my voice sounding good compared to earlier in the week, so it's been a long week of recovery from that. I haven't felt that sick in a long time, but have been able to get back in here and get the show recorded for you this week, so please bear with me if I sound a little bit gravelly. I will be moving on through the show pretty quickly trying to get this done. Heard from a couple of listeners this week. I want to thank you very much. If you'd like to comment on a show or send in a correction or a suggestion for a future episode, you can send those comments and suggestions in to comments@nursingshow.com, and I'll make sure I check them out and get back to you and let you know what's going on with the questions you might ask or where I can make corrections if possible on the show. But all of that is made possible through your comments and contributions here to the community at The Nursing Show, so make sure you keep those comments and suggestions coming. I did hear from our friend Tim in Australia. Tim sent in an article about some proposed changes to the scope of practice for nurses in New South Wales in an effort to help alleviate the shortage of physicians there. There is a plan to include nurses more actively in cases of patients having needs for minor medical intervention and care, situations of minor injuries, illnesses, or the necessity of having prescriptions renewed for an existing illness or problem. Certainly, nurses can step in and intervene in some of these situations when physicians are not necessarily always needed. So, Tim, thanks for that article, and I'll have a link up later in the week. Let's jump on into this week's news, and I'm going to start off with a story out of Tennessee, looking at a bit of a scandal surrounding Columbia State's associate's degree program for nurses, and the fact that there seems to be a bit of a discrepancy between the way the program is taught at two different campuses of this college. And there are complaints from students that one facility has a much lower rate of retention than another. In fact, lower rate of retention than other nursing schools statewide. And they would like an investigation into why this is the case. They feel that there isn't as much support for them as students, not as much tutoring availability, and the instructional support is different between that campus and another campus of the same program. Now, this school seems to be turning out good nurses at the other end. They have a high pass rate. I think 86 out of 90 students passed the NCLEX on the first time around the previous year. So they certainly are turning out well-trained nurses, at least to the minimum level required by the NCLEX exam. But this doesn't mean that they aren't missing the opportunity to bring other nurses along to have the opportunity to test. And this is that balancing act that many schools face. Whether you're an associate's program or a BSN program, there is a balancing act that faculty take where they decide how difficult the program needs to be in order to make the students raise the bar for their learning, for their responsibility, for studying, for everything they need to do to become good nurses at the other end of the program. And so this is something that the Tennessee Board of Nursing is looking into. One of the things they want to make sure that is similar in all of these programs is that students find the ability to find adequate tutoring and resources to assist them if they are having trouble with certain aspects of a class. Some of the programs that are being proposed to assist this is to improve teacher development and improve access to tutoring services for the students. This is a problem that we're likely to see in many nursing programs across the country as the pressure is raised to bring more nurses into the field through the different nursing schools out there. And so as this pressure increases, these schools are going to be really looking very hard at their numbers, not just the numbers of students that are admitted to the program, but the numbers of students that are retained in the program through a successful graduation and a successful passing of their NCLEX exam at the other end. And there needs to be a balance. Clearly, when you have a program like this one in the article that is losing 50% of their students throughout the course of the program, seems to me that somewhere along the way, there needs to be some more support for these students. Either that or they're letting the bar be unnecessarily low at the entrance end of the program. So we'll look at this more, and I'll be looking for more articles like this from other nursing schools to find out what their take on this problem is. Moving along into our next item, I thought I would look at this interesting article I found over at Medical News Today, and it is from a study conducted at Case Western Reserve University's Francis Payne Bolton School of Nursing, and a researcher there is studying the necessary interventions to help new mothers recover from prolonged bed rest prior to delivery of their child. So many mothers are put on bed rest restrictions prior to birth because of a number of health problems. And this bed rest is not something that is, as the researcher says, a benign solution. In fact, according to her research, along with research from NASA, of all places, has found that prolonged immobility, bed rest, and lack of strength training movements can actually cause a marked deterioration across the body's health systems. And so this study is looking at a series of strength training, cardiovascular training, and rehabilitative interventions following prolonged bed rest in new mothers to help them get back to the strength they need to be having and taking care of a baby following the birth. So this is something that I think is very interesting. Again, this points out the need for nurses to be proactive and looking at the little changes, the interventions that we can make in patients' lives to bring about a solid improvement for them. And it doesn't have to be anything major. One of the things this study found was that by using similar types of interventions, such as the same interventions used for elderly women to help maintain bone density and strength and stamina, can be used possibly in this same situation. I'll be looking for more from this study as more is published, but I think this certainly points out the need for us to think outside of the box. And when broad blanket interventions are made, such as giving a patient bed rest, we need to help them both understand the necessary problems associated with bed rest and help them to understand what is going to be needed at the other end to regain their strength and stamina so that they can return to a pre-bed rest state of health. And that's something that a lot of mothers may not understand. They may not know why that prolonged bed rest has had such a marked effect on their overall health and well-being. So something to think about if you're in the child delivery services as a nurse, if you're associated with an OBGYN, this study might be of great interest to you. And I think this study would be of interest to anybody that is dealing with patients that may be on bed rest or near complete bed rest due to an injury, recent surgery, or illness, that we need to encourage them to continue moving and get their stamina back as quickly as possible. So studies like this are very important towards the promotion of a patient's return to optimal well-being following any kind of procedure or surgery. Finally, I'll close out the news this week with a look at a story coming out of the Centers for Disease Control on a revision in their numbers of new U.S. HIV infections every single year. Now, this revision is not coming about from a misinterpretation of the rate of which this infection is occurring. So we are not having an increase in the rate of infections, but they have revised their numbers based on new statistical tools, and that number has increased the number of new infections by 40%, up to 56,000 new cases every year. Now, this is still down from the height of the AIDS epidemic of 130,000 in the mid-80s, but it is still a number that the researchers say is still alarmingly high. And it does show that there has been no decrease since the initial decrease that occurred in the early 90s following a concerted national effort to educate the public. So what does this mean for anyone in the healthcare field? It points out the need for continued education, both of the existing sexually active public and the newly sexually active public. This means that there needs to be much more public education of teenagers, of young adults, of young gay males, because that population is seeing an increase, as that population is not being targeted as heavily by the advertising and efforts of programs to educate them about safe sex practices. So it's something that people need to be made aware of. Also, there's a misunderstanding about the effectiveness and the actual ability of medications that control the HIV virus, that some people actually believe that that control is a cure, and that is not the case. So some people are making a decision to enact risky behaviors, but they are not making that decision in an informed way, because in fact, they are not being able to be cured should they contract this disease. They will actually only be able to hold off the disease for a period of time if they are infected. So it's something that we need to educate our patients about. We need to ask questions of our patients, and we need to be willing to turn our patients to appropriate resources when necessary to give them the information they need to make an informed decision about their health. More on this story is linked in the show notes. This is a very long article. I urge you to check it out and find out more about how this might apply to your specific area of nursing. For the tip and trick of the week this week, I thought I would look at the two inflammatory bowel disorders, Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, kind of compare and contrast them for patients that may have contracted these diseases, and give you a brief overview and review. Now, there are some really excellent resources available on these two diseases over at the National Institutes of Health. I have provided starting points to their main links pages for both of these disorders in the show notes, and I urge you to really head over and check them out. There are some excellent flash-based patient tutorials on the website, as well as resources that give you a whole lot more information than I would ever be able to give you here in this brief overview. So I urge you to follow up on what I talk about here and go and follow those links and give yourself some extra time to learn more and give yourself a better review in depth. The differences between Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis have to do with the section of the GI tract that is affected and whether that inflammation is limited to just the lining of the GI tract in that area, or if it affects the entire depth of the lining and the underlying supportive tissues. So in ulcerative colitis, this inflammation is primarily limited to the large intestine and limited to the lining of the large intestine. So you can remember that by remembering ulcerative colitis is limited to the colon, colitis, and is ulcerative, that ulcers are limited to the lining itself. The inflammation there will progress and lead to bleeding in the GI tract and will also lead to bloody diarrhea as one of the primary symptoms associated, as well as abdominal pain. Crohn's disease, on the other hand, can affect any portion of the GI tract from the mouth through the colon and including the esophagus, stomach, and small intestine in between, and also does not just affect the inflammation of the lining of the GI tract, but also affects inflammation of the underlying tissues as well. Also, Crohn's disease can affect different portions at the same time. So you could have a diseased section of the small intestine followed by a long, healthy section, and then another diseased portion, depending on where these inflammations occur. diagnosis of these two diseases occurs by the performance of imaging studies, both upper and lower GI studies, and colonoscopies to determine whether the presence of these ulcerations in the colon are there, in which case they may primarily diagnose this as ulcerative colitis. And the upper GI will also show whether there are inflammations in other portions of the GI tract, which would lead to a diagnosis of Crohn's disease. Also, Crohn's disease can actually, because of the larger depth of the inflammation and the problem associated with that, can lead to the formation of fistulas or connecting passages to neighboring organs or neighboring spaces in the abdominal cavity. Organs like the bladder, the vagina, or actual fistulas to the skin and to the outside of the body can be formed when persons have Crohn's disease that goes untreated. Along with imaging studies, upper and lower GIs, and colonoscopies, other tests will be performed. Fecal occult blood tests to determine the presence of blood in the stool. Also, the presence of white blood cells in the stool. And the presence of increased white blood cell levels or the presence of anemias in blood testing can all go towards pointing to a GI bleed and ultimately assist with the diagnosis of these disorders. Because of their inflammatory nature and the fact that there seems to be an autoimmune response occurring, it is related to arthritis and other autoimmune disorders. However, it is uncertain, according to the research I've done, whether these are actual autoimmune diseases in and of themselves or whether the autoimmune response is already present and is causing the inflammatory response in the GI tract. So that will need further study down the road. Whatever the cause, treatment of the underlying inflammation is the most proactive choice. And this would include treatment in ulcerative colitis with aminosalicylates like sulfasalazine, corticosteroids like prednisone or methylprednisone, and also immunomodulators to try to modulate the immune response. If these don't work, surgery is an option, but again, surgery is often an extreme measure and does not, just because you removed a single disease portion of the bowel or the small intestine, doesn't mean that you are going to be removing the disease. Often the disease will just crop up again in another segment, and especially in the cases of Crohn's disease. So patients need to make informed decisions when facing surgery so that they understand that a recurrence of the disease is possible. Also, there's an increased incidence of bowel cancer in patients with ulcerative colitis, about 5% in some studies that I've looked at. So this is something that we need to be aware of and testing for as well. One final note, there is a disorder known as irritable bowel syndrome that causes cramping, abdominal pain, bloating, constipation, and diarrhea, and it causes a significant amount of discomfort to the patients. But it is important to note that irritable bowel syndrome is not an inflammatory bowel disorder of the same nature as ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. And that is because this does not cause any permanent harm to the intestines and does not lead to other serious diseases. But it can be disabling and cause severe problems in patients that have chronic irritable bowel syndrome. But it's important to note that there is a difference between these two disease processes. So that's a quick wrap-up. As I said, there's a ton of reference material that I've linked to in the show notes and a whole lot more than I could go and ever cover here in the short time frame associated with this podcast. But at least that's given you an overview, a quick review of these diseases, and gives you a starting point to learn more should you need to do so. So that's a look at the show this week. I want to thank everybody for checking out The Nursing Show and remind you to head over to nursingshow.com to find links to everything I've talked about in this particular podcast. I also want to remind you to get back in touch with me with your comments, your suggestions, and corrections about this or any other episode. You can reach me by email at comments@nursingshow.com, and I'd love to hear from any and all of you regarding this episode. I'll close out the show with some excellent PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network over at music.podshow.com. This week, a song by Jonathan Colton He is the epitome of PodSafe music and has a great set of music for you. This week, I'll play his classic song, Code Monkey. So that's going to wrap up the show this week. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, hoping I'll be sounding a little better by next week's show. Until next time, I want to remind all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say Code Monkey very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do Code Monkey think? Code Monkey think maybe manager wanna write goddamn login page himself. Code Monkey not say it out loud. Code Monkey not crazy, just proud. Code Monkey like Speedos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey, very simple man with big, warm, fuzzy, secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey, hang around at front desk till your sweater look nice. Code Monkey, offer buy you soda, bring you cup, bring you ice. Say no thank you for the soda, cause soda make you fat. Anyway, you busy with the telephone, no time for chat. Code Monkey have long walk back to cubicle. He sit down, pretend to work. Code Monkey not thinking so straight. Code Monkey not feeling so great. Code Monkey like Fritos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey, very simple man, big, warm, fuzzy, secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey like you. Coffee cake, take bath, take nap. This job fulfilling in creative way, such a load of crap. Code Monkey thinks someday he have everything, even pretty girl like you. Code Monkey just waiting for now. Code Monkey says someday, somehow. Code Monkey like Fritos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey, very simple man, big, warm, fuzzy, secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey like you.